All right, we're good to go.
I guess we need to go around the roll call here. Start with Kevin here.
Kevin Tyler, Clark County Public Works.
Oliver Jim, Clark County Public Works.
Danielle Cowley, Public Works.
Dave Rowe, Railroad Board.
Neil Chambers, Railroad Advisory Board.
John Hansen, Railroad Advisory Board.
John Schaefer, Advisory Board.
And Daniel Weaver, the Chair of the Board.
Eric Fuller, Advisory Board.
And Randy Williams, Chalachi Prairie Railroad, BYCX.
Okay, and who do we have online? Anybody?
We have Jim Malinowski.
Railroad Advisory Board.
And Mark Hersag is also online.
Okay, so we do have a quorum.
Some of you are not speaking in the mic, and so it's hard to hear everyone.
Get the mic, I guess. has everyone read the minutes? Anyone read the minutes?
I move we accept the minutes as written.
Okay. What's your
goal? It says here that Highway 99 Railroad Bridge is painted.
Can you use your mic, please?
It says in the minutes that the Highway 99 Railroad Bridge is painted.
Not the whole bridge, just the bearings. You want us to clarify that?
Unless you count graffiti, the rest of
it. Yeah, it's all painted.
Good point. Yeah. Good point. Yeah, we can clarify that in the minutes.
Okay, any other questions, comments, changes? All those in favor, say aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
You're opposed?
No, he's. I think he was saying aye.
Related.
Yeah.
Okay. The minutes are approved. I have no comments after my dissertation last week. Nobody from PBJR, you want to talk about BYCX?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. We're doing pretty good. As I mentioned before, our main locomotive, diesel locomotive, number one, the Alco 1942 Alco, did have some major issues. We had to pull the turbocharger, and it's on its way to Reno to be repaired. And the main generator is out of it now. It's going to the East Coast to be repaired. So hopefully we'll see those back sometime in the near future. Currently, we're investigating getting Longview Fiber 7001, which has been in storage in our yard, possibly get that running so we can have another heavy locomotive. The engine in it was retrofitted with a Cummins V903, and it was damaged. The rain cap was left off of it, so it filled up with water. We have another 903 engine that runs, came out of a tugboat. So they're in the process of evaluating whether that's going to be put in and try to get that unit back in service. It's in pretty good shape other than needs an engine exchange. We had our train robbers in August went well. Our trains were pretty close to being sold out. We had a good participation, good weather. We don't typically run on the main holidays, Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day. But just the way the calendar fell, we ran Saturday and Sunday of Labor Day weekend and had 300 passengers that we didn't expect. So that may change. We run with train robbers run on the third week in July, third week in August. So 2 weeks after that, we just happened to be running and it was Labor Day weekend. We didn't run on Monday, Labor Day, but we ran on Saturday and Sunday. And right now with our abbreviated consist, we're running max of 100 passengers per train. And that weekend we did over 300. So we were better than 75% occupancy on a weekend that we wouldn't even normally use. I had the opportunity with Nate Bruce from PVJR to inspect the whole 33 miles of track. We were attempting to do a rail speeder run with the group that I belong to. Unfortunately, we couldn't get all the paperwork done in time. But Nate and I ran all the way down to Fruit Valley, down to where the cars were stacked up waiting for interchange. So we did that, and then I took him all the way up to the other end. He hadn't been up to our shop yet. So we went up there, and there was my car and two other cars. So we had a pretty good day, and it was just hot, bloody hot out there. DNR says we're level 2 on industrial fire protection. So I am doing fire patrol. I stay using my speeder. I got 2 water tanks in it, and I stay a mile or 10 minutes behind the train, just looking for little smokers on the side of the track. And so we've been doing that as well. I think that's, we had some issues with security on our depot, and at the suggestion of Deputy Charles Harris from Clark County, we put up some gates. I picked up some like cattle gates at Wilco. We put them up there. We added signs on all the cars, no trespassing, and we've added more cameras. And that seems to have curtailed kids up on our deck and people around our cars. There was somebody 2 nights in a row shining bright lights on one of the cabooses, but we didn't find any damage or any vandalism. And when we have that kind of stuff, we go through everything, chucking like couplers and brake pedcocks, to make sure that they haven't gone through and just played with something they shouldn't have. We have our monthly meeting tonight. So we'll be going over stuff. We're looking at the section between milepost 22 and 23 is the next section that needs attention, either by us or if Oliver feels generous. But that's the next section that we need to do some work in. There's a few, the 2 private crossings around milepost, about 24.5, there's 2 private crossings. One of our engineers has also noticed that we need some attention in there. So that's our next little project with track. Anybody have any questions? Hey, Dave.
Yeah, this is Dave Rowe. Did you have any sparks behind your train on your speeder?
No, we haven't. Well, I'm a mile behind it, so I don't see anything, but I haven't seen any evidence of fire. In the 10 or 12 years I've been there, we've had 2 fires. One of unknown cause on the grade, and DNR was there putting it out when we came back. The one that the DNR put out that we didn't know about, the steam engine broke down around milepost 22, and so we went and got the diesel to pull it back. And because it was pulling harder on the grade, it blew a bunch of hot stuff out of the exhaust system. And we since added a spark arrestor to that engine. The other fire, we had fire patrol that day. It was a retired fire captain from Southern California, and his wife and the speeder, they kept it at bay till DNR could get there and finish it off. We just didn't ran out of water. But that's the only 2 times that I know over the last 10 or 12 years that we've had anything start.
So what was the purpose of you and going up and down the line with the people from PBJR?
What were we doing?
Yeah,
we were looking at the tracks for feasibility of a rail speeder run. We were trying to, one of the national organizations was trying to facilitate one. They've run on the north end tracks before, and PVJR has been getting friendlier with us. I talked to Eric Temple last week. He offered if we wanted to run all the way into Battleground. And the advantage to that would be we have a runaround track. They're not going up that far. They're only going up in the Brush Prairie where Anderson moved their plant to. So we're going to talk about that tonight on our board meeting. But we were looking at tracks for doing a speeder run, and tracks themselves were nice. All the work that's been done, the bridge work was great. The clearing of all the brush was great. We found one spot that's a defect that we can't take a locomotive over. It's at around probably 17.8. There's a curve that dips quite a bit, and it's a little too low on the inside. It would probably want to tip the locomotive. And then, of course, once you start moving the center of gravity, then it can be all over with. And it's a long downhill. So anyway, that we talked about that. We're trying to formulate something, see if PVJR is going to repair it or whatnot. Because of our engine number one being down and engine number nine, the steam engine, we're still waiting for the FRA to get out. I'm sorry, engine 10, the steam engine. We're waiting on an FRA inspector to come out and look at what work's been done so we can keep going. The previous FRA steam inspector was local, and he decided he didn't want to do steam anymore. So they're having to groom another guy from a different area and bring him in. So we're waiting on that, make sure that we don't have to redo any work so we can proceed getting the steam engine back together. But yeah, we were looking to just, that it's a, it would be a fundraiser for our nonprofit because the speeder, the rail speeder operators pay a fee to use the tracks.
And did I miss it if you talked about the building? Anything happening on that?
Eric and I talked about it. We're going to revisit it. But obviously, we've lost one of our grants. There was approximately a $450,000 grant that did not get renewed this year. I keep renewing the grants. That was to pay for the track work to get into the building. But shrinkflation has really hurt us. We've been working with a contractor that Eric liked, who was trying to value engineer, you know, do we make the building smaller? We're running into energy code changes on our building design. So we were going to have to go back and redesign it. This was all stuff Doug Ahlberg was working on when he passed. And until I can figure out how to get more money, and I'm thinking we're going to need something to around $3 million to finish what we wanted to build. Until we see line of sight for some cash, can't really proceed with anything. If we make the building smaller, that might preclude fire sprinklers. That was one of the problems. If we build a building, doesn't have fire sprinklers in it, the guys can't work in there. And that's going to be hard to tell them, no, you can't go in there to work. You can only store stuff. If the stuff's in the building, they're going to want to play with it. So it's kind of a circular argument. Where do we go from here? Well, the first part of it is, where do we get the money?
Yeah. Does Eric have an interest in being part of it?
Oh, yeah. Eric has a definite interest. And we had worked out previously with Eric that he would have access to the building with notice. I mean, we just have to clear stuff out because the original building design had 100 and I think it was 180 to 200 feet of track, two tracks, one with a pit. And he has no pit on his tracks to service his locomotives. So anything he does, they're on the ground. So yeah, he would have interest in it. And now that the bridges are all repaired, other than that one little spot around 17.8, that would be a place that he could take his stuff to work on. And we would welcome him up there. There's a couple places that we have like the depot is too close to the track. So we'd have to post it as a restricted space kind of thing. But other than that, I think he's interested. He said he would help us with more money. And we just haven't had an opportunity for Eric and I to sit down and talk.
About the extension of the lease.
The what?
The extension. What about the extension of the lease? Didn't you have to have it?
That's something else that we have to have. And Eric, from what Nate has told me, because I talked to Nate quite a bit, that Eric was okay with that. And we just haven't ratified it because we don't have a building. But that's one thing we have to do because the terms of the grant was we have to have 10 years of running space after the building's completed. And so that would be something else that we'd have to work on. Again, when the county and PVJR renewed the lease, we now work with PBJR, not the county. And whereas before we our lease was with the county. So that's kind of where we're at with that. If we had line of sight for the funding, I think we'd probably be able to get the building done.
Okay. Thanks. okay, county activities.
Yeah, not a lot to update you on today in terms of county activities. Working with the Public Works Finance team to calculate the remaining grant balance so that we can program a little bit of additional work up in probably up in the Yakult area like Randy was talking about. So we should know that within the next probably month and then schedule a meeting to get started on that. And then with the rest of my time, I'm going to yield it to Oliver Jim, who was our construction manager for the two projects over the last year and a half. And Oliver's going to walk through some of that information with you all. So let me work on bringing up his presentation here. And I heard something beep, so I'm going to check and see if we got people that want to join. Looks like we're all good. So, with that, turn it over to Oliver.
All right. Hello, everyone. I am the construction manager for these two railroad projects that we've been working on in the past year. So I'm just going to share a brief overview about them. You can go to the next slide. So the first project I'm going to talk about is the railroad rehabilitation project. It's railroad track maintenance between milepost 23 and roughly milepost 24. And we did clearing grubbing from milepost 14 all the way up to 24.3. Next slide. Yes. Can you hear me? I'll try to hold it closer. The total contract value was about $500,000 on this. We did about 1 mile stretch near Moulton Falls where we replaced the cross ties, did ballast distribution, and we surfaced the track. You can see the picture of there of some of the finished work that was done. We also cleared and grubbed about 15 feet on each side of the track, all the way from Battleground up to Yakult. This work was completed by Lee Contractors, and it started in April of this year and ended in about July. Next slide. And the second project was a bridge rehabilitation project that we did. This covered maintenance for six different bridges, bridge 6, 12, 18, 20, 23, and 25. You're going to go to the next slide. And here's sort of a brief overview of where all the bridges are located. Most of them are up in the northeast part of the county, but we did have one that was kind of in the Vancouver area. Next slide. I'll kind of do a little brief overview of what we did on each bridge. This is kind of an elevation view showing what, some of the work on it. We posted piles on this bridge mostly, and one of them was in the water. If you go to the next slide, you can see a couple pictures. This one was pretty tall. It looks like it's about 20 or so feet. Yeah, it's not the tallest one, but for six?
75? 50, 75. It's not
the
I would want to jump off.
Well, there's barely any water under it, so I wouldn't do any jumping off. But yeah, you can see we posted some piles. There's a little top view of it. We can go on to the next one, Bridge 12, which this one is way taller. This one's probably closer to like 40 or 50. We did a lot more work on this bridge. We did the stringers, piles, pile caps, braces, and walls. And really the work that we were doing was wood that was identified as failing or rotten. We replaced in kind. Next slide will show a little bit of pictures of the work where they replaced some piles and some construction photos. This was done by RailWorks Track Systems.
Yep.
We can move on to Bridge 18. This one had a fair amount of work on it as well. The ties, some of the piles, bracing, and both of the end walls. We actually lifted up the track a little bit on the ends. If you go to next page, we'll have some pictures of the work that they were doing.
What?
Yes, we...
No.
Yeah. No, we replaced the approaches.
Which is the one that we were going to replace? And
That's the next bridge. We can go to that one, 20. It was missing a lot of wood members when we first got to it, but we managed to put them all back. This one had a bunch of stringers, piles, mud blocks, pile caps, and braces. If you go to the next.
So we were able to repair it and not
yes.
replace it.
That right picture is a picture of a complete bent that was put back in place.
Anticipation of replacing the bolts. We'll have a very simple diagram to replace that two or three culverts. And because he wasn't a professional engineer, the county nixed that issue. And so the bridge sat out of service for trains because all the cross members have been cut out of it. And they of course disappeared also.
Yes, they did. But we were able to put them all back. Next one's Bridge 23, which is kind of the longest and biggest bridge. There's even a steel truss in the middle of it. We didn't do that much work on it, but we did some stringer, some piles, mud blocks, and braces on this one. If you go to the next slide, we'll show a little bit. We did some of the walkway as well as change order work. And then the next bridge is Bridge 25, which is one of the smaller ones. We did the stringers and then a few connections and pieces here and there. There's a picture of the finished where they put some ballast on the approaches. The next slide shows kind of the cost breakdown. This entire project was about $2 million. So this chart kind of shows how much was allocated to each bridge. Bridges 6 and 25 were more minimal in work, with 12, 18, 20, and 23 having a little more significant work involved with it. And we also repaired a slide in near Moulton, where they took out a bunch of rock and cleaned up the track. So that's my presentation. Does anyone have any questions?
That was
a long time coming through for me.
Is that you, Jim? Did you have something you wanted to add?
Yes. After the speaker stopped and asked some questions, I haven't heard a thing. People need to use their mics.
So, Randy, whatever you were saying, I don't think anybody picked that up.
I'm sorry. I didn't push the button. No, what I was saying is the work that was done was excellent. Especially the grade, that was a big issue for us. We just couldn't put enough energy in there to keep up with it. I think they said they put in 480 ties and 500 tons of ballast in that area. We let them use our yard as a staging area out there, the yard and the Yakult, which worked out well. But the bridge work, everything, the walkways, it all looks great. And our group is very thankful for the work that the county did out there.
So what are the load ratings for these bridges now?
Kevin might want to speak to that. I don't know what the plans are for testing.
So we did load rating analysis for all of the bridges that could be rated. Bridges 18 and 20 couldn't be rated because they were in a state of disrepair. But the other bridges have load rating analyses. And the load rating analysis at the time took into account the defects that were identified in the most recent bridge inspection report. So theoretically, the load rating that they were rated to was based on those repairs being done. I think OTAC identified more repairs, and we did change orders for even some of the additional repairs. So I think what at this point we would need another load rating analysis, or at least confirm that it meets the initial analysis, and then we would also need to add those two bridges in to see what their load rating is. So, and I believe there's something in the lease that speaks to the county and PVGR collaborating on a load rating analysis after the repairs are done. So we'll be looking into that here in the near future.
So theoretically, the two that were out, that were not rated before, would be back up to a rating that would be acceptable.
Similar to the other bridges that are out there, yes. Okay.
Process of handing these bridges over to Eric now?
I don't have an answer for that for you right now. I know that we've now completed everything that was identified in that 2020 bridge report, bridge inspection report by HDR. It's the same thing that was identified in the lease. So we can now transfer those bridges on the south line. So everything south of Hyacinth, so that would be bridge 18 southward. I've been waiting for, I think we have the substantial completion and as-built for all the bridge repairs. I don't think we have that for the bridge painting yet. But once I have those pieces, I think we can then work on that transfer process and check the language in the lease and make sure that we follow all of the. I think that might be the process. Yeah, but I need to check the lease and talk with the attorneys and make sure. Yeah.
Kevin, did you get a call today from a lady at the Surface Transportation Board?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I turned it over to you. Is that your responsibility or PVJR's?
That's a really good question. Up until now, it's been our responsibility, and we contract with. So what Randy's bringing up is there was a community or citizen complaint for maintenance on the railroad. And what they were talking about is the graffiti on the bridge that's over I-5. It was actually about a year ago. We had Department of Transportation paint it, because we don't have staff that do that kind of work. And so they painted it, and we reimbursed them for their costs. And so somebody complained about it, and it made it to the Surface Transportation Board, and I'm not sure how. They have.
They called City of Vancouver Public Works, and Public Works, a guy talked to the lady for a while. They referred her to BN. BN referred her to me. And I said, well, that's not our turf down there. It's either Kevin or Nate. I gave her numbers, your number and Nate's number. So that's how you got the call. But it was a complaint, apparently some distasteful graffiti. And I thought it was a Highway 99 bridge.
Yeah, it said I-5 Hazeldale. So that's where we see most of the graffiti is on that bridge. But then I had also spoken with the one of the sheriff's office deputies recently who was interested in it. And he mentioned that he saw some painting that apparently washed out of Dunnigan. So I need to look into it and follow up on that. But that's an ongoing issue. Any other questions on repair projects?
We did see on our little exploration run, the Hazeldale Bridge and the bridge over I-5 at both ends, there was quite a bit of homeless activity. And then on the lower section down towards Fruit Valley, there was some homeless activity down there too.
Yeah. We working with WashDOT, WashDOT just went in and cleaned up the encampment on the south side of the line near Highway 99. And BPA and the county were working on a section in Cold Creek that's on the east side of Highway 99. And then we also had somebody clean up an encampment out of the Hazel Avenue crossing of the railroad within the last year. So it's just an ongoing issue. The people keep moving back in. As soon as you clean up and get them out, then a couple months go by, and it's, you know, we got to go back in with the sheriff and do it all over again.
Yeah, I had a question, Dave Rowe. What is the track weight on most of our line? How heavy is that rail?
I don't know, Randy would probably be able to answer that better than I would.
Well, you have quite a variety. I'll just say it's the lightest I've seen on the main is in the 60s, like 65 or 66. The heaviest I've seen is 112. And there's all kinds of mixes and matches in there and different kinds of comp joints. And yeah, it's a real variety because over the years it was, you know, something goes bad, you splice it with what you have. You know, there's road crossings in Yakult that are pretty lightweight in the town itself, and the ties are collapsing under the street. So those are going to be projects too that are going to have to come up, decide if that's a town responsibility or county responsibility. But I haven't seen anything over 112 anywhere.
And I think so more of the line down in the Vancouver area. So Battleground Southward has had that rail upgraded to a little bit larger sizes. It's out near Yakult and beyond that you see the smaller pound weight. It's like, I think 66 is like the original, and that's where you see the stamp from whatever 1905 or something like that.
I found in 1907 the other
yeah,
day.
Yeah. And even some 1880s.
I thought we had an analysis done of that at one time, and that most of the track above Battleground is 66 pound, and the bulk of it below there is at least 90 pound.
At least 90, yeah.
A couple of years ago, they was talking they could get used rail. Is that still possible? And to be donated, used rail, if we do need rail? A couple of years ago, we was talking about that. And I don't
know there was a bill that was pushed to up in Olympia to have donated rail be part of a tax break. I don't think it made it through and wasn't passed into law.
Is it still alive or just totally dropped?
I haven't heard anything about it recently.
It was a fast track to get passed, and then all the stuff at Yakult, or not Yakult, but Shalashi hit, and everybody was screaming, and they just dropped it.
Yeah, it was supposed to include 85,000 ties, relay ties, that would have to be sorted, and part could be sold to pay for the labor to sort them out. I got a call from, it's been a couple months ago, from Cameron Harrison at BN offering me ties by that gondola load. He says he has to ship them to Texas to burn them. And he says, we'll sort them out and give you gondola fulls of them. Can't get them up there because of the track. But or we could go down and get them with a truck. But and Nate apparently has a lot of ties too. He offered me ties the other day. He said, if you need some, we'll get some up to you. That bill failed. It didn't get passed, and it was to be a write-off of rail material.
I think the thing that died up there was mainly for the steel. Did the county adopted something?
We entered into an agreement with PBJR to be able to accept donated railroad ties and then have PBJR manage those as long as they were invested into the line. Again, that was a year and a half or so, 2 years ago, and we haven't done anything with it since that was approved.
After it was adopted, all of a sudden, a whole bunch of railroad ties showed up in the 78th Street yard. But then I've just seen people haul them away.
Yeah, there's still some sitting there. I haven't seen a whole lot of them move.
It's kind of degrading.
Yeah. I want to be respectful of Oliver's time. If you guys have more questions for him, if not, we can let him get home to his family and move on to the next agenda item.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, okay. Oliver.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, anything else from the county?
Nothing else from the county. And I will work on bringing up Neil's presentation now.
So Neil's going to run through his presentation where it is right now. He's sent it out to us. I don't know if you've all looked at it or not, but I think it looks excellent. I have a couple of places where I think we need to add some information, but we'll go over that. And why don't you just go ahead and go through what you have now and move.
And then we'll go back and just kind of go slide by slide or whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
Just kind of yeah. Go from there. So,
yeah.
Okay. So in the late 1800s, there were several failed attempts to connect Vancouver by rail across the Cascade Mountains to Yakima. Although the goal was never realized, the rail that was finished did have an impact on the development of Clark County. Next.
What bridge is this?
This is a bridge over Salmon Creek.
Okay. Could be identified, couldn't it?
Today, I'd like to describe the railroad and its location. Next. A brief history of the line. Reasons the line is good for our community. And present visions for the future. The Sloughi Prairie Railroad has been known by many different names over the years. The most recent, the Lewis and Clark Railroad. It's 33 miles long. It starts around Northwest 78th Street and Lakeshore Avenue, where it connects with BNSF lines at Rye Junction. The end of the line is in Sloughi Prairie. This map depicts the route and how it bisects Clark County diagonally and the communities that are along the line. Who's who? The railroad and the right-of-way are owned by Clark County. Portland-Vancouver Junction Railroad, PVJR, has a lease with the county to operate on the line. Eric Temple is the owner of PVJR. Battleground Yakult and Sloughi Prairie Railroad, BYCX, is an all-volunteer organization that runs a tourist train from downtown Yakult. The advisory board is a group appointed by the Clark County manager. Railroad history. This is going to be a brief history of the line. If you're interested in learning more, the Clark County Historical Museum published a great article written by Greg Harrington in their 2023 yearbook. Originally proposed to reach Yakima from Vancouver, the initial tracks were installed in 1888, but did not extend to Yakult until 1902. In 1901, the Yakult burn devastated the area. The railroad was crucial for salvaging the burned logs and bringing them to market. Besides freight, passenger rail service was offered from Yakult from 1903 to 1932. In 1950, the tracks were extended to Sloughi Prairie after Harbor Plywood acquired a mill in the area in 1948. The peak period of the line was from 1950 until 1979, when International Paper closed their mill in Sloughi Prairie. The line was purchased by Clark County in 1986. Here are some of the justification for acquiring the line. Stimulating economic development along the tracks. Promoting an excursion train as a local attraction. Create a 33-mile-long trail adjacent to or along the right-of-way.
and preserve the right-of-way for future utilities. So some of the challenges. For most of the railroad's history, Clark County was mostly rural. Rapid growth starting in the 1970s has residential development building close to the line. Rail car sizes in the early years were a fraction of the size that modern cars are. Since Clark County has owned the line, there have been a push to upgrade the rails and ties to modern standards. There's still a lot of old rail in place. Land use. Light industrial land adjacent to the line is commonly used for non-rail use. For the railroad to thrive, there needs to be real estate available for companies that will use the line. Why is rail better? Rail transport is cost-effective for moving large quantities over long distances. One rail car can carry 3 to 4 times the freight of a truck. Freight railroads are much safer than trucks when measured by the mile ton. And rail requires less of a footprint and is more economical to build and maintain. Environmental benefits.
We got to catch up here.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Environmental benefits. On average, trains are 4 times more fuel efficient than trucks. The steel wheels help protect groundwater. Recent studies have shown that rubber tires release a chemical that kills fish. Reduction of greenhouse gas. By reducing the number of trucks on the road, the overall amount of fuel burned is reduced. A short line versus mainline railroad. Rail companies like Burlington Northern and Union Pacific primarily operate by moving large amounts of commodities from point A to point B. They're not set up to move a few cars of product to businesses off the main line. This is where short line railroads shine. Nationally, 20% of all products shipped by rail either started or ended on a short line railroad. Traffic on the line serves customers on the line. Speed will be less than that of the main line. Clark County's track is currently rated at accepted track, which means there's a speed limit of 10 miles an hour for freight. If the track is improved to class 2, the speed could be increased to 25 miles an hour and 40 miles an hour for class 3. The amount of traffic will be significantly less than the Burlington Northern and Union Pacific main lines through South and West Clark County. They are very busy and move 40 to 50 trains per day. Currently, the short line carries about 800 cars per year. The short line would likely never see more than 2 or 3 freight trains per day under the very best of circumstances. Economic goals. Facilitate access to rail for local manufacturers and logistic firms. There are many small companies that could benefit by having access to the railroad for delivering raw materials and shipping finished product. Create job opportunities that offer sufficient wages to support families. And maximize the tax base by making better use of land located next to the line. Development guidelines. Clark County Code provides a provision for economic employment districts. Railroad Industrial is designated as IR. This district aims to accommodate industrial activities that are optimally suited for and can leverage proximity to the county's rail line. This designation will not be applied to the entire line, only those properties that make sense. Screening requirements are part of this code. The picture on the slide is a street view of 112th Avenue in front of SEH America, a manufacturer of silicone wafers. As you can see, the berm shields the view of the factory. These requirements also cover odor, noise, light, glare, and vibration. Solid rules make for good neighbors. Here are a couple of examples of the type of industries that would be ideal for a rail-served development. At the top, you've got Columbia Vista Sawmill on the river. You've got Columbia River Carbonizer in Woodland, and the Far West Steel, which is at the Port of Vancouver. So then we talk about the Shlachi Prairie Railroad. BYCX operates an excursion train under the name Shlachi Prairie Railroad. They're an all-volunteer group. Their station is in downtown Yakult. They operate May through December. They seem to have more than their fair share of train robberies. However, you could consult with their schedule to see if you want to avoid this outcome. Future Transit. Given the rail line's location between growing population centers, it may make sense to add passenger rail in the future. Advances in battery-powered trains may allow for less costly infrastructure. An electric pantograph system would be more energy efficient, but more expensive to implement. Rail with trail. A study was commissioned in 2008 by Clark County to look at a trail to be aligned with the rail. The first section of the trail was started at Battleground Lake, opened in 2011. The vision, including aligning the trail next to the rail in non-industrial areas. There are no current efforts to add to this trail. Clark County Short Line Railroad has been an incredible amount of growth since being acquired. There are many different ways for the line to provide a place for expanded freight access, industrial development, tourism, and recreational opportunities, and be a great neighbor. Any questions?
Very good. Very good.
I have a couple of comments. If it's time.
Go ahead.
Okay. On slide 12, one of my concerns is this is you're not talking about the. I disagree with the statement that the peak period of the rail line was in 50 to 79. The peak period and most interesting history was in the 1910s, 1920s, when Weyerhaeuser was doing their recovery of timber after the Yakult burn. And we've got, in our museum, we've got a map that shows all the railroad extensions all around the area. We've got the remains of an old railroad bridge crossing Cedar Creek just on our neighbors, just upstream from us on Cedar Creek, where you can still see the old logs that were part of that bridge. Fort Miller came to Yakult by train because the rail and started the electric service in the town of Yakult because the roads were so bad for traffic that it was a lot easier to get to Yakult by train than it was any other way. And so that period, I think we need to have expand coverage of that period and how important it was. And then finally, this is a terrific job, and I really admire how you've done. But one thing I noticed is I think you really need to end with some summary slides that hit the highlights of why it's important to maintain the railroad and keep it available for future use. So I really think it needs a stronger ending. And I personally don't think spending time talking about a trail, if it's not going to happen, I'm not sure we should be wasting our people's time with that if it's not a realistic future option. So those are my comments.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
I think we could mention that period of time previously, but our purpose is not to really embellish the history of the line, but to embellish the the future of the line. So our effort should be in the future as opposed to what historically passed, but certainly mention it. I don't have a problem there. And as far as the trails, I think it does give some hope to some people that would like to see more trails that it can be done in the future. So that's a future project also. And I agree with you on the summary. That makes a lot of sense to maybe embellish the summary. My major comment is that we need to expand the economic benefit to talk about the taxes and really quantify the tax amount that can be gained by converting property along the line from agriculture or some other use to industrial use for the railroad, because it's like a four times, five times multiple of the tax base there. And also, and I can call Jennifer Baker at the CREDC and get information from them as to whether they have current inquiries about rail served businesses. Because remember when we were doing the railroad industrial or the rural industrial land bank, we got lots of input from them on the number of people that were requesting property that were rails served, and it was quite a benefit there. So those things need to be added, I think, in that economic section. John's the one that can help you out with the tax base stuff, because he's done it before. It can just update that information and put some kind of brief summary. We're not going to overload it with that stuff, but some kind of summary we could put in there and say it increases how much it affects the tax base and the school base, because you know, a lot of people that are going to be hearing this will have children in school and be interested in the school, the amount of school the benefit the schools get. Do you have anything, John?
Yeah, a couple things. One, usually when you do something like this at the end, you have an ask. You ask people to do stuff. You know, otherwise they go, "Oh, that's great," and you go home. So, you know, what do we want when they leave? What do we want them to do? Well,
I think that's very valid, and that we ask them that to help support the rail in a meaningful way for the community.
The other thing is on the slide for zoning. More towards the end.
Was that the land use slide? Yeah. There's economic goals. This one?
Yeah. Go down to the last one there. When you're talking about the code, we said that it's not going to be for the whole railroad or something like that.
Yes,
yeah, it's
not going to be. Applied to the entire line, but the way they've got this designated. So if you were going to set some property like the railroad property,
yes, that's a problem, because that zoning cannot be applied outside of the urban growth boundary.
Outside or inside?
You cannot apply it outside of the urban growth boundary. Mm-hmm.
So the railroad industrial cannot be applied. So what? How do they zone anything outside the?
Well, that was 5517, the bill that, you know, is law, but it hadn't been adopted by the county. That allowed the zoning of the Lackler property, you know, and we could look at other places up the line. But right now, there's no code that allows us to develop anything industrial outside of the urban growth boundaries, and that ends at just south of Lagley, or yeah, just south of Lagley property.
So that should be the ask.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You know, but
so do we bring up 5517 and maybe ask them to support maybe that there's some work with the legislature to correct the deficiencies of that in order for it to be applied.
And I think that that's something that, you know, when we complete this and we're ready, we have to go to the county councilors.
Right.
And if they don't have anything to do with 5517, then we're kind of between rock and hard place. But the way it stands right now, we can't do anything outside your movement. That's the problem.
Well, the point I was making with this is that if you're going to develop railroad industrial area, there has to be rules that mitigate things for the that are people that are nearby.
And,
you know, the berm, the controls on vibration. These are the concerns that the neighbors have, and we need to show that the railroad and the county understands that and are doing something about it.
But somewhere we need to have in there that we're looking to have this implemented, and maybe it's before that you say, well, you know, we're looking to railroad advisory board is looking to get the implementation of this provision passed by the legislature implemented in Clark County. I mean, in a soft way that we're asking their support for implementing that in Clark County. And then you can go on and say, in implementing that, we will need to do these things, which is what you're talking about, the berms and the.
And we did all that. But I don't think it's been adopted yet.
No.
So it's kind of just.
So I think the overlay was put in place, but there's no development regulations that go coincide with that. That's where we paused.
But this is part of the county code, the 40-230-.
And that's different than what we did for 5517.
What?
We weren't doing railroad industrial. We were doing something else.
Well, it was a new railroad industrial. It was
new. Yeah, because there was railroad industrial existed years ago.
Right.
I worked on this in 2008 is when we looked at this.
When we had all the public meetings.
This was before that.
It was a railroad work group.
Lagler was on that committee.
Correct.
That's a problem we got to work out. And it'd be nice to know from the county councilors if we say that we want these people to endorse 5517, that that's okay with them.
Well, they'll see that in our presentation. And if it's not, we'll.
Before we do all the work.
we're already there.
If I may. So the process that we go through to request a work session with council, there's what's called a 9-step planner. And within that, you include why you're having the work session and what you hope to get out of the work session. So that could be explicitly stated. So I can work on drafting that, and then you can review it in this meeting and alter the language and say, you know, like, we want to address X or Y. And then it's very clear to the council what you're asking them. So when they consider scheduling the work session, they can have that conversation if they choose.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because then we'll get that advance notice whether they want to blow us up or not.
The other thing is Eric and Jeff Swanson got into a huge battle because Eric didn't want the rails for trails coming south from Salmon Creek. So I don't know if he's a friend, he supports rails with trails or not.
So I use the rails and or the trails all the time, every day. I mean, I'm on my bike, you know, a couple times a week, and do all the trails in Clark County and in Vancouver. And I'd love to see the expansion. I've looked at the maps; they're really not that invasive. There's a lot of the trail is using the Patton Expressway. They're using the existing Discovery Trail from Salmon Creek or up to the freeway. So I think, you know, I'd like to see some movement on that that part of it and up in Battleground to continue the line they've done and finish it going into Battleground. You know, the trail goes nowhere right now. It's go one way in and you have to turn around and go back out to the Battleground Lake. So.
First of all, we don't need to have...
You know, as a neighbor up here in North County, me and my neighbors don't want a trail. I think most of them would be happy with the railroad, but trails attract people who are irresponsible. Unless you fence the trails so that they can't get on adjacent properties, you're going to be putting in burdens on adjacent property owners that they're not going to want. And I think linking the railroad with trails is going to generate opposition that you don't need.
Well, I think to go along with that, when they did that section from Battleground Lake coming down, one of the reasons it was so expensive is that they did the design work to take it from Battleground Lake all the way into Battleground. And then they found out that there were some properties on the rail line that the county didn't own. They had easements. And the easements were for rail use exclusively. And property owner said, if you put a trail on here, it nullifies the easement. We want our property back. That kind of killed that.
Yeah, there are many impediments to the trail. And I don't object that we have it in there, but maybe we don't play it up as much as it could be, because it has a lot of impediments other than it's not good for the neighbors, the people that own property in there. I mean, if you remember that about a year ago, that when they were doing that trail out to the coast along, and they went through the backyards of some of those people there, and the people there just went nuts. I guess they didn't object so much until all of a sudden they got all these people coming in and laying in their backyard, resting and throwing their bottles and cans and everything else in their yard after they went down the trail ways. So those are the things that I think Jim is talking about, the people running through your backyard, because it will happen in certain places.
Yep. I mean, when they're trying to do the Columbia River Trail, that was the whole thing. You know, they were going to go from downtown Vancouver all the way out past, you know, 162nd, 164th. And that was all the property owners. They just got in arms because they didn't want public in their backyard. So it's one of those deals. You got a lot of people. I think you have more people that would support it than wouldn't. But again, it's, you know, which audience are we going for here?
So I think
right. No, and that's great. And that's what we're doing here. Now we're kind of trying to shoot over just to see what, because if we do it, then we're prepared. If we don't do it, we'll be like the county when they had their open house. The neighbor did all the shoot, and wasn't pretty.
Maybe we just downplay it a little bit, but yeah. Certainly leave it in there.
But see, like on the financial side, like with Lagler, it's huge numbers. But, and that's maybe why the ask is to get 5517 moving, because it's outside the urban growth boundary right now. And what I really worry about is one of these days it's going to be in the urban growth boundary, and they'll probably zone it for single family housing, and that'll be the end of, you know, a great site for industrial development in our county.
Okay, any other major comments that we need to do? I don't know if you want to work on that for a while and then we'll have a meeting with John or I or whoever else wants to meet.
I'm not going to be here the next meeting. I'm going to be in Phoenix. So if we want to meet ahead of time, I could meet toward, you know, the later part of September, and then maybe we can just get together and I can give you what I've got. You guys can talk about it at the next meeting and then maybe work with him to figure out.
I'm not going to be here next month either. And I'm leaving Thursday. So I will only be here 1 week this month, and then I'm gone till 15th of October.
So if you want to just write down anything and email it to me, what you would like to see or not see.
I'll see if I can dig all my stuff out. Probably all the numbers have changed. But the idea is that just, you know, like one thing that would be nice if we could have like one page, go, this is the job. And this is what the guy gets paid, get like an average wage for most of these things. And this is how much tax goes here, and this is how much tax goes there. And you know, here's property taxes. You know, this is what it is right now under agricultural exemption. It's $6,000 an acre, and it should be $350,000 an acre.
Do you have those figures?
Huh?
You have those figures for even plug in?
Oh, I have them, a year ago.
Yeah, they're probably for 2023. I don't know.
Yeah, so they're a little dated.
If he can give me the numbers that the properties looked at, property numbers and all that, I can look at it real quick and get a quick and dirty. All we need is the major impact, saying that the valuation of the property goes from such and such to such and such an increase of this, and then it's allocated to the schools and the streets and whatever else it's allocated to.
Yeah, and nobody's going to be checking all our numbers. We could do an estimate of what it is without having to every single deal and just say it was for all the property was $350,000. Now it's, $250 million.
Right.
And here's what schools get. Here's what the city gets. Here's what the county gets. Here's what the fire department gets. And because that's all listed.
Or we could put it in terms of what 100 acres would be under that method, under the new method, and where that would go, and say how much increase that is. I mean, it's a huge increase. Well,
I want to do it in bullet points. I'm trying to keep this thing down to a reasonable time frame. It's a little bit longer than I'd like it right now. So we need to, if we can get some good bullet points for that, and I'll just start cutting some other things out of it.
And maybe if you want to just short slide, just maybe have one slide that has all four bullet points and you can kind of go through them without having additional slides.
We do that. I just like to.
Yeah, no, it looks, I like the way
it's super. It's still not very, it's not too long right now. I mean, it's pretty short.
It's about 12 minutes is what I timed it. So
the thing is, if you get people to come out and listen to what you have to say, you got to give them a good presentation, and you got to be available to answer a lot of questions.
Yep.
Some of the questions we're not going to be able to give them good answers to.
Well, it's just I don't work for the county. I don't work for the railroad. I'm just a citizen doing the best I can answering questions.
But. One of the best people to present because he's a in-between guy.
But when somebody's going to say something like, well, can you guarantee I won't have a train running through my head all hours of the night? Well, the answer is no. And they might not like that.
Well, perhaps this should be part of the development guidelines, Maybe it's just,
the thing is, those things, like one of the things that the neighbors had that Cedars, what is
it? Yeah.
The Cedars, is that what it is?
Golf course, yeah.
Yeah, they just had two entrances into their subdivision, and they're close enough together that a train could block it. And, there could be an emergency and people need to get out the train and it'll be blocked. And
I think that's resolved now with the new.
There's regulations how long they can block an entrance like that, because I've had to call the railroad a number of times in my career to say your railroad's past this time. You have to get it out of here. And in no time at all, they move it because it's a federal regulation.
Well, plus
and they enforce it.
I think they put a new
for safety
exit in. They're putting a new exit in the area anyway.
That's the problem.
One of the topics I.
It's only one way, and I think there is a federal regulation.
The federal regulation, isn't it?
The Supreme Court case right now is that Mississippi, Alabama, there was one entrance into this whole area, and it had stores and stuff. and the train would block it for hours. And the state passed a law said you could do that. And the federal appeals court said the state didn't have the authority to do that. It'd only be done by the feds, and they hadn't done it. So it was illegal for them to cite for safety reasons that they had to move this train. A railroad operator can agree to a term, but if the states can't mandate it to, and it's in the Supreme Court right now, and they ever find room to do anything besides Donald Trump, maybe they'll get a decision on it.
So one of the topics I was looking at to present a slide is I tore apart the proposal for the rock quarry, and they'd done some traffic studies as far as what it would look like if they had, if you know, they wanted to pull the rock out that they wanted. They were proposing, if at very best, 1.3 million tons of rock per year, and if they did by truck, 32 tons per truck, that would be a rock truck with a trailer fully loaded. The total number of trucks to pull out would be 40,625 in a year. And that per day, they'd have to have 156 full trucks going out of there and 156 empty trucks coming back in. And then they broke it down and says, well, if we did it by rail and trucks, it's 0.3 million tons of rock per year by truck, that broke it down to 36 trucks per day. And then the rail, they would be running 50 rail cars per day full of rock out and back again. So I was just trying to figure out, you know, how would they do that? Probably two trains per day. So it'd be a 25 car length. So what would that do as far as blocking things?
That's a heck of a lot more than, a lot better than 46 trucks or whatever you said.
Right. But, you know, just think of the amount of wear and tear on the roads in North County. Those roads are not designed to take care of that
kind
of
roads. The traffic is what I'd be more worried about.
Well, but I think I'd be opening up a can of worms that we talked about that in this thing, because it's not something that's happening right now. Might happen, might not, but.
Well, you've already said that it 3 to 4 times.
Right.
The amount of trucks, and I mean, you could put in there an example of saying if you were hauling so many tons of this, you'd take, 46 trucks a day and only two trains.
Right.
I mean, you can just make that analogy. I mean, that makes it much more than just a 4 to 1.
Right.
That's harder to fathom than if you say it's 46 trucks going back and forth versus one train. Yeah. Or two trains coming in.
I've got a comment about trucks. I live by Daybreak Park, and I've had two windshields broken by rocks coming off those trucks when they're taking the corner down by Manly. So we never keep track of how many people's windshields get broken by trucks. The more trucks you get, more likely you're going to have a broken windshield. That's something else we could explain.
Okay, I've broken two windshields going.
There's a safety issue.
Up and down the I-5.
Or the Bell.
Yeah.
The safety issue too. How many accidents right. on a truck versus rail? It's very rarely you don't get a rail accident, but boy, trucks, especially some of those drivers.
Question came to me this is a year ago. It was hard. I didn't really have an answer. And the question was, Port of Vancouver has all this property that's all in manufacturing, this rail serve, and all these businesses you're talking about could be sited there. It's right off the main rail line. Why would you want to spend the extra fuel and money to ship the same material all the way out into our farmland? Their words, not mine. And when you have this property right here that you could use.
Where is this?
So my understanding is the Port of Vancouver is very picky about the types of jobs that come to the port. They have to be paying a certain amount. They have to be employing certain amount of people. Having a short line railroad and having businesses, smaller businesses that could take advantage of the line that wouldn't be able to go to the Port of Vancouver and find a place.
Of course, the businesses that we're talking about for Flagler are those businesses. You know, they're big businesses. They got 200-300 jobs. They pay well. They're not the little transloading thing that we got out there now. But when Burlington and Northern said that if the rail was improved and the property was zoned correctly, it'd be like their premier site on the West Coast. So that's going to bring in the big guys. And when CRDC was doing their analysis, got one of them with 700 jobs that had to be rail served and had to have at least 200 acres. And those are the things we're looking at for Flagler, but that's also the things that the Port of Vancouver is looking at. Yeah, I don't. But that question is going to come up, so be ready to answer it.
Sure.
Okay. Do you have enough guidance to work on? When are you leaving, John?
I'm leaving Thursday.
This Thursday?
Yeah. And then I am gone till the 19th. I'm here the week of the 22nd, and then I leave the 29th, and I won't be back till the 15th of October.
So why don't you send me all your stuff if we can't get together between now and then? I don't know. I only know day to day right now because I'm technically on jury duty call this week.
But you're not on my jury.
they didn't call me today, so I don't know tomorrow until after 5 o'clock.
You got my numbers.
What? I know, but I don't think I have all the property numbers, do I?
I don't know, you might.
Well, take a look at your stuff, and you may have to send it to me again.
I'll email it to you.
Because I have this pile about this tall in my den that's got all the stuff that we did for that presentation.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, anything else? Anything for the good of the order?
Dan, do you want a draft of that 9-step?
Yeah.
For the next meeting to talk about? I can probably pull that together in time.
Is anybody going to go to the Pacific Northwest Rail Summit on October 15th to the 17th? It's going to be held in Portland. They're going to have a lot of good discussions about advancement to rail. I'm going to be signed up for that, but it'll be pretty interesting if someone wants to go to it.
Anybody online maybe want anything?
We don't have anybody from the community that would be here to speak.
Okay, no questions, comments from anybody? Do I hear a motion?
Last weekend, train on the side. East of the fire station there, I built 250,000.
That's right. They're going to build. All right. Anything else? Nobody? Hear a motion for adjournment?
Yeah.
I guess nobody's against it. Off.